it is in our best interest to deliver the highest quality care in the most efficient way, never losing sight of quality and safety. But where is the right care in the right place by the right clinician at the right price? It's in our best interest to figure that out.
Hello and welcome to the Better Care Podcast, where we share the stories and insights of clinicians, healthcare leaders, and innovators who are improving the way clinicians work and deliver care. On today's episode, we have Evidence Care's co-founder and chief medical officer, Dr. Brian Fengler, interviewing Melinda Hancock, executive vice president and chief transformation officer for Sentara Health. Melinda joined Sentara in 2021 and oversees strategy, growth, transformation, integration, and project management. She has served in a variety of executive, financial, and administrative roles at health systems like VCU Health System and Bon Secours Mercy Health, as well as being a previous partner with DHG, where she led the payment model team to develop products around value-based reimbursement. As you can probably tell by this brief background, Melinda has a ton of great insight into the financial and administrative management of health systems, which I know are topics that her and Brian are going to discuss today. So without further delay, Brian, the mic is all yours.
Awesome. Thank you, Spencer. And Melinda, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. So Melinda, I do want to start just a little bit on your background before we dive into kind of what you're currently doing. So, you know, with your education and finances and as a CPA, what's driven you into healthcare? Like, why the passion around healthcare and not going and doing something else in financial services or some other industry?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking that. And great to see you, Brian. And thanks for having me today. I fell in love with healthcare early on. My dad is a physician, retired physician. And I just really enjoyed the aspect of the healthcare field. I did think I was going to do something different, but chemistry was not my friend. So I quickly discovered, though, there's every role in healthcare. And I probably could have done with a little bit better career counseling. So it took me a while to realize my path. So I did have to go a little bit of extra time at the good old College of William & Mary, but I did find my path. And I discovered that my gift and love of math, accounting, could be combined with my desire to be in healthcare. I wish I had discovered a little bit earlier, but I think all journeys are there for a reason. And I certainly did learn a lot during my journey to find my path. So I discovered that every role in healthcare is intertwined and has its own purpose, and that I could fulfill a lot of what I was looking for, combining my skill sets with my desire to go into healthcare.
Yeah, love that. Well, we're going to focus most of this podcast on how, you know, sort of to align clinical initiatives with financial outcomes at health systems. And so just to kind of kick that off, you know, can you share how your experience as a CFO and healthcare operator has had an impact on, you know, as you engage in clinical transformation and care transformation at a large health system?
Sure. It was given to me first as a project. I mean, way back when. And at first I was like, okay, I mean, I love taking on new things. One of kind of my mantras and one thing I do relay to people as I mentor them or give them advice is never say that's not my job, because some of the best things I've done in my career is things that didn't necessarily fit into my job description. So when this came along, I was like, okay, let me jump into this. And I think my desire to solve things and my desire to understand, combined with understanding the financial implications, my first project was sepsis and hospital-acquired infections. So understanding what are the financial implications of these disease states of our patients while they were in our facilities. And I also learned there are certain ways of sharing that information, because in some cases, show and tell doesn't work. When you're working with, how do you want that information to be impactful? What do you want people to do with that information? Just laying it out on a graph or on a grid isn't helpful. Mm-hmm. Also, if it includes fixed cost or overhead, that's not impactful. That's not what my audience can do anything with. So I learned a lot early on of what's the information that's useful, how to involve people, actually even in the data analysis, involve the clinicians. I did not understand sometimes how the different disease states came about, how they were treated. So actually understanding what is the cause and effect, what can be impacted, what are the levers, helped me then create a better product of trying to understand the financial outcomes. Because just understanding a patient with or without sepsis or with or without a, you know, MRSA only gives you, to be honest with you, just a little bit of information. Mm-hmm. Understanding how that disease state comes about, which is what I get by partnering with clinicians, is a whole lot more helpful. And so I learned early on, show and tell doesn't work. It's engage, involve, share, iterate, and really find that product that best works.
Yeah. So you've now moved in recently into the role of Chief Transformation Officer at Sentara Health. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
What have been some of the initiatives that in that new role you've been engaged in to align those clinical practices with, you know, financial sustainability of the health system?
Well, yeah, first of all, most people are like, what's a Chief Transformation Officer? So I have the joy of helping to implement our strategic plan, which really is the process of bringing together our care delivery and our health plan assets together in furtherance of really being best for our consumers, meeting them where they are, and really imagining healthcare to be more simple, seamless, personal, and more affordable. Words that we don't necessarily use today to describe healthcare. So as you can imagine, there's a tremendous amount of opportunities here to work across different departments, different business units. And so what I've been trying to do is create that good environment to foster ideas, innovation, and creativity to make sure that we are thinking not just where the puck's going for a consumer, but reimagining how we actually take better care of our consumers. Every single patient and member is on a different place in their healthcare journey. So how do we make sure that we are a trusted partner in meeting them where they are, not necessarily build it and they will come? Mm-hmm. So by doing that, we have to partner with our clinical teams and our financial teams and a variety of different teams across the organization. So we have set up a transformation structure that does that and super excited about some of the investments that we've been making, some of the initiatives that we've been launching, things like redesigned care delivery. So we know the workforce of the future is a challenge. So how do we also make sure that we are thinking differently about how we deliver that care, not just reimagining it for the consumer, but reimagining it for our care deliverers as well? Because what we do today can't be how we do it in 5 years. So really thinking differently about that, making sure we're also optimizing our really important resources, top of license, making sure we're optimizing skill sets and reimagining sometimes how that workforce looks and feels. So some of the initiatives are things from everything as simple as what is that skill set we need to manage some of the, whether it's imaging or what it may be, or even how do we actually schedule our patients from a segmentation perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But some of that's also education to our patients.
Yep.
You know, I know many patients who, if they don't see a physician, doesn't count. Mm-hmm. But how do we also say, hey, what are your needs today? Because mm-hmm. if you just need to get a vaccination or you just need your meds refilled, that doesn't require a physician visit. So how do we also help people become more comfortable with advanced practitioners, with other type of care deliverers, and really help widen that experience and also optimize all of our clinical providers? So we have a lot of initiatives that are helping us automate, think differently. Also, how do we also optimize our clinicians' time, whether it's inbox management or ambient listening? So how do we also think differently about that? But I'll be honest with you, Brian, a lot of what we're doing is foundational building too. A lot of IT infrastructure, Because that seamless word I used earlier, that doesn't come easy. So making sure we're tying in all that information. I mean, how many times do we ask a patient the same information over and over and over again? So not only are we digitizing all that, but we're also saying, well, what information do we truly need? So we have clinicians and administrative teams working together to say, what is the data we actually need? And how many times are we going to ask you for it? And where are we going to store it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I could ramble forever.
No, that's amazing. I mean, I love all of it. And I love the fact that as a health system, you're taking that proactive approach, asking those hard questions in terms of not how can we optimize where we are today, but where do we want to go? And we know, obviously, the healthcare industry needs to evolve very quickly to stay sustainable. And just the fact that you're going through that effort can keep you guys ahead of the curve and be able to adapt more nimbly in the future with that foundational infrastructure in place.
And one thing I want to share with you is we have 1,400 initiatives that we have right now. A third of them are what we would call live. So that means 2/3 of them are still coming through the pipeline. So that's the exciting part too. We've got, you know, thousands of people ideating and thinking through, well, what next? How else can we think about this? And so that's the really fun part as well, is we've got a lot of stuff piloting and going live, but we've also got this great pipeline of ideas coming through. Because if you stop and you ask people, imagine a world 5 years from now in Sentara or elsewhere where care is simple, seamless, personal, and more affordable, what would you do? What's your idea? And then how do we, you know, use the resources of the transformation to see, is it feasible? And who do we need to bring in? And so that's been the really fun part of this work. In some cases, we've canceled 76 initiatives that got all the way through, got fully vetted. They got combined in another things, or it wasn't the right time, or we paused them. But it's been really exciting to help people really imagine how we do a better job, given who we are as an IDN. Sorry.
No, that's perfect. I was literally just going to ask, sort of in previous conversations, knowing that you have that matrix. Mm-hmm. First off, you want ideas to come from everywhere, but I'd imagine there's even more than 1,400 ideas within your organization. So first question, how does something make it into that matrix?
So we do have stage gates, but anybody can submit an idea. So we have an actual ideation tool that does allow all of our 30,000 colleagues to submit an idea. Anybody can submit an idea. It's then vetted to see, is it a transformational idea? If it's not, it's then sent to the department that it relates to, because it still might be a great idea. It just may not be transformational. It may not be something that fits within the transformation structure. But if it does, then it starts to go through the stage gates. And the different stage gates have different approvals, have different supports. So as it starts to move through, eventually it gets reviewed by finance and it gets a business plan. So at some point, and it must have a business plan. But it gets reviewed by all sorts of dependencies and consultations, depending on what it is. So if it's a clinical initiative, if it's someone who wants to, you know, maybe it's to reduce length of stay, let's say, or let's say it's to reduce readmissions, then it's going to be reviewed by our clinical officer. It's going to be reviewed if it's involving a new contract. It's going to go through a legal, privacy, risk, and compliance team. It's going to go through our finance team. It's going to go, it has an HR dedicated team member. It has an IT dedicated team member if it has an IT component. So we surround this initiative, and then there'll be an owner called an initiative owner. We surround this person with all sorts of resources, change management, analytics, you name it. And we make sure that it's fully vetted before it then goes live. And so that's the great part about it, is we don't expect somebody to just take it and run. We surround it, we vet it, we work it through. We also make sure it's not duplicated in another effort somewhere, or shouldn't be combined, or maybe it's related to another effort. So let's say it does work to reduce readmissions. Well, as you can imagine, we got quite a few initiatives reducing readmissions. So maybe we've already captured that value somewhere, so we don't want to duplicate that value, but it's a great initiative. So we're going to tag it and make sure it's tagged with the other readmission ones. Also, given that we're on an integrated delivery network, we have to make sure that we're looking at what's the impact to the health plan and the impact to care delivery? And so what's that financial impact from an integration perspective? So it really allows us to really take a holistic view of that initiative. And if it's a pilot, we're putting in the KPIs, we're putting in the milestones, we've got the business plan. So it's a pilot and it works. Imagine how quickly then it can be replicated and spread across the system. So if it's in what being piloted in one hospital and it works, it can quickly spread to our other 11 hospitals. And so that's the fun part about it too, is part of that getting in the business plan in is you've got to put in KPIs, you've got to put in your milestones. And every month you go in and you put in your actuals against your forecast once it goes live. So we actually know monthly how well it's doing. And so we've got that nice accountability, but also celebration of a success real time.
It's amazing. One more question on the matrix. So things make it in there and we say, okay, this belongs as one of these 1400 opportunities. How then do you decide what to prioritize? Mm-hmm. Is it clinical impact? Is it safety in terms of this is something we have to have? Is it financial? Like, how do you decide, you know, which of those 1400 to move into the top 100 or 200?
It's a variety of different things. So we do some prioritization because, as you can imagine, not everything can happen at once. So whether it's a capital constraint or human resource constraint, and, you know, just like in any organization, you usually have, you know, a lot of people assigned to one thing, and you really need to be mindful of especially your human capital constraint. And so we do have a prioritization. So we have portfolio management that we built at Sentara so that we can have a really good view of all projects, including the ones that are being managed outside the transformation. So we have a view of all projects across Sentara. So it's not just the transformation projects. It's also some of the other projects that are housed outside. So we can have a full view. And it's a variety of different ways that we make the decisions. So you named several of them, but I can't say that it's one or the other. Obviously, safety and quality are paramount, that, you know, there's nothing more important. The quality and safety of care that we give our patients and members are critical. So those obviously get prioritized very quickly. Outside of that, it goes through a variety of different filters of how it gets prioritized. In some cases, when we're doing that prioritization, we also discover things that can be stopped, paused, or even combined into other initiatives. So that portfolio view is so important because in some cases, we don't have that line of sight all the time of all the things that are happening in the organization. And it really gives us an opportunity to be like, whoa, you know, let's give ourselves a break during the time that we've got this big implementation going on or something like that. And then let's pick back up. So from a resource management perspective, making sure we're not putting too much on our colleagues and our teams to get things done.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to one thing that you had mentioned about, you know, you said the term ambient documentation. We know that's something that's evolving very quickly and that, you know, the EHRs are investing heavily in. How do you guys look at that as an organization? Is it, geez, with ambient documentation or optimization of their workflow, their inbox, we can save them an hour a day. They can see three more patients. Or is it more, you know, if there's no financial impact here, it is worth the cost because it's worth our human capital and avoiding burnout with our clinicians. I mean, do you guys design a dollar ROI or is it more just this is the right thing to do and we want to do this to, you know, engage with our clinicians and be on the same page with them?
I have to go back and look at the KPIs you put on that one, but I do think we're tracking both. I think, you know, obviously the burnout's lagging. It's a lagging indicator. I think we are tracking number of hours saved, though. Well, I can tell you it's both for us. I think we actually might be tracking both too, because I think it's, you know, you kind of have to put your money where your mouth is, right? Because it is important. Both are important to us. And yeah, the early feedback we've been getting has been fantastic on this work. We have to make sure that we are taking care of our workforce. It's not about just redesigning the workforce like we talked about earlier. This is one example of how to make sure we're doing some of that, saving that time in the evening, making sure we're not burning people out, but also saving that time during the day where they're not, you know, the clinicians aren't always feeling like they're behind. I mean, that's not a way to work. And so I think it's so important that we do both.
So shifting gears a little bit in terms of you guys being an integrated network with, you know, a payer as part of the organization, how does that change your guys' perspective as opposed to, you know, a health system that doesn't have a payer, is working with all their payers in their state or their region to try to maximize revenue and reimbursement? Does it bring a different lens to, as you look at care transformation, how you deliver care and what care setting you're delivering that care? How does that influence you guys as opposed to some health systems that may not have a payer within their infrastructure?
The mere fact that we are an IDN is really driving our strategic plan right now, because we feel like we are uniquely positioned. We are 55% payer, 45% care delivery as of today. Mm. And so we think that uniquely positions us that, yeah, so let's take me as an example. I'm a Sentara patient and I'm a Sentara member. That means as a care provider and health plan, Sentara Health knows me very well. They know if I got my screenings last year. They know if I filled my scripts. They know if I had my wellness visit. They know all this. So I should have an expectation that they should be taking really good care of me. They should know me very well. So why aren't they?
Well,
what we aren't looking to do, though, is create this as a silo. So what we are doing is, let's use all that information to do a better job of taking care of Melinda. We know what Melinda needs. So how do we make sure that when Melinda calls to schedule her wellness visit, we remind her, hey, you never followed up on your last mammogram, or you never, you know, it's time to schedule your next colonoscopy or whatever it may be. We should be helping Melinda take better care of her health. We also may notice that she is the you know, caregiver and guarantor for her mother. Let's help her schedule those visits as well. So how do we do a better job of that? So then how do we then take those learnings, and especially as an integrated delivery network, it is in our best interest to deliver the highest quality care in the most efficient way, never losing sight of quality and safety. But where is the right care in the right place by the right clinician at the right price? It's in our best interest to figure that out. And it's as unique as each patient and member. So that's where analytics and AI and doing a better job of technology, we can't do this manually. We have to make sure we're investing, which we are. That's what a lot of our transformation efforts is paying for, is a much larger investment in technology. But then how do we take all this that we learn and then apply that to our partnerships with other payers, with other providers? This shouldn't be just for the Melindas. This needs to be for all of our patients, for all of our members. So this is not something we're expecting to keep just siloed in with the Melindas. This is for all of our patients and members. But we also have a natural pilot right now with the Melindas to say, all right, well, that didn't go well. Let's try it again, which is also the beauty of the transformation. Given how we've structured it, given that we know monthly how things are going, how the KPIs are, we're putting in those actuals, we know what's going on. We can also pivot. What's going well? What's not going well? If it's going well, roll it out. And so that's kind of the beauty of all this working together.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, you just mentioned right there, and you mentioned a few times technology and data and analytics. You know, I wondered if you could give, you know, maybe one or two examples of kind of where you guys have invested in that and you know, maybe some early results or something you've seen as a positive on those investments.
Well, you know, obviously the ambient listening with DAX. So that's been, and that's been great and been going well. We are investing in our analytics right now. We are working on segmentation with our patients from a scheduling perspective. So back to the comments I was making earlier, as we're redesigning a team-based model of care in our ambulatory settings, how do we do a better job through our clinical access center and through scheduling of, all right, so when Melinda or Brian calls in, who is that right care provider that they need to see? Do they need to see a physician? Can they see an APP? What is their need? But also understanding we have a large number of very complex patients. So how do we make sure we're managing them better on an outpatient basis? So what is the frequency with which they need to be seen? and making sure they're seeing the appropriate level of care on the right basis. So it's using analytics to do that on an ongoing basis. And so I think bringing all this different work together is so important. We're always looking at opportunities for investments and for innovation. And we have a chief venture officer we brought on board this past year to help us think through those as well. Because as you can imagine, and as you know, there's a lot of opportunities out there in the healthcare space. So we're continuing to evaluate those and vet those on a regular basis. And many are coming through the transformation process.
Yeah. So as an integrated delivery network, how are you guys looking at social determinants of health and, you know, how you can look at that data to see how you can best deliver care to patients, you know, and the needs that they have?
On the health plan, so some of the things that we are working on the transformation is, for example, we're looking at some technology to help our seniors with loneliness and with some of the issues that they may have so we can get ahead of some of that. So what are the things that we need to do to help our seniors with some of their issues ahead of time? Obviously, we're complying with all the questionnaires and things like that, but what are we doing with it? So I think it's important. Some of our corporate goals involve making sure that we are getting ahead on some of our screenings, getting ahead on gaps of care. So the beauty of being an integrated delivery network is understanding where our gaps are, working together to close those gaps, understanding what's causing those gaps. It's, you know, as you know, it's not necessary from a clinical perspective. So how do we make sure that we're getting into the neighborhoods? We've actually started setting up community cares clinics through our health plan in areas that we have identified through analytics are the most at need, based on care gaps, based on transportation, based on food deserts, based on a lot of variety of different issues. And so we have been rolling out across the Commonwealth a variety of mobile and fixed site community cares clinics to help identify the areas where we can help close some of these care gaps, knowing that's where some of the big key issues of social determinants exist. And so I've been doing things like that and also just creating more opportunities to see people where they are. We're actually putting care into the home. We go into some of our Medicaid members' homes to do their eye screenings for their diabetic retinopathy. Did I say that right? Yes. Screenings. We go into their homes to do that. It's so important. So instead of saying, hey, come to us, we're going to go to you. And again, making more test kits available at home now that, you know, that technology is really advanced, really being able to get more testing into the home instead of course, asking for them to come to the clinics where transportation may be an issue or, you know, whatever it may be. So we've been really doing a lot on the health plan, especially since 60% of Sentara revenue is Medicaid. So it's a huge part of our mission is making sure we take care of those who are most vulnerable. So it's been a big part of how we approach how we do our care.
That's amazing. Melinda, so just to finish up here, what advice would you give to healthcare executives who are just beginning their journey? Any key lessons you learned early in your career that if you knew back at the beginning would have helped you maybe advance your career more quickly?
Sure. I think one thing we're doing really well with this work right now is really helping people be inspired by the work. We do things called change stories. And yes, we do success stories as well. I think, you know, people love sharing the successes of their initiatives, but we also do, we help people envision. So, you know, back to the simple, seamless, personal, more affordable. Asking people, so 3, 5, whatever that time frame, years from now, imagine a Sentara where the healthcare is more simple, seamless, personal, more affordable. What does it look like to you? And of course, we're in an industry where we're unique, where we experience our own work every day. And sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's challenging. We all have our stories, but we also all see the challenges of today's healthcare. And we've got headwinds. They're still coming. They're not going to stop. We've got challenges in workforce. We've got challenges in reimbursement. We've got challenges galore. But how do we continue to advance how we actually deliver the care to our patients and members? And when you ask people to actually envision that, what does it mean to them to be more simple, seamless, personal, more affordable? Their visions are so inspiring. Mm-hmm. And for many of them, that's why they're working where they're working. And so I wish I had done more of that earlier in my career, because the partnerships that creates and the camaraderie that that creates, it's touching. And I can't tell you, we've had many, many teary meetings. The stories are that inspirational of why people see this work as so important and why they're in healthcare to begin with.
Yep.
And so I wish I'd done more of that early on. Yes, I told a story at the beginning of this of why I went into healthcare, but it's not why I stay here. Why I stay here is for these stories and for making a difference and for my own change story of I'm tired of managing four EMRs for my mom who has Alzheimer's. And I'm tired of being, you know, I'm non-clinical, yet I am the source of truth for all of her clinical information. I can't even pronounce half her meds. You know, so I imagine a world much better than that.
Yeah, well, it's amazing.
Well, Melinda, thank you so much for joining me today and us on the Better Care podcast. Really appreciate it and really enjoyed hearing your insights and some of the initiatives that you guys are doing at Sentara Health. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it. Good to see you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Better Care podcast. To ensure you never miss an episode, we encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on your preferred platform. Additionally, your ratings and reviews are invaluable in helping us reach a wider audience. Please consider leaving a review, and if you do, email us a screenshot at marketing@evidence.care, and we'll send you a thank you gift. For access to exclusive content and further healthcare insights created by Evidence Care, please visit evidence.care/bettercarepodcast and subscribe to our email list. We appreciate your support and look forward to connecting soon.